He said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
He said, she said, SNU, February 2014. Can you believe it?
No, the time is just, I can't believe we're in the middle of February already. It just blows my mind. Time flies when you're having a good time, so they say.
No doubt. So what's cooking, dear?
What's cooking is bison loaf. Now, we've had bison meatloaf before, and I've done this recipe a few times on SNU, but just a little twist to it. And there's a multitude of things that you can do with ground meat. And, of course, we know that bison is your all-time favorite, Corey, and that they say it's recommended for a healthy heart diet. And bison is high in protein. It's about 40%. It's got iron and minerals and alanine and carnosine and carnitine and creatine, double that of feedlot cattle, by the way, and also B12. So it's a great health food and a great bodybuilding food. That is if you are a meat eater, right?
Which I am, absolutely.
And me too. So we know what's in bison, so what's not in this fabulous tissue protein? It's got fewer calories, less saturated fat, less cholesterol, no growth hormone, steroids or subtherapeutic antibiotics. And why is that, Corey? Why is that?
Why is what? That there's no antibiotics in it?
Yes, and hormones and steroids and subtherapeutic antibiotics.
Well, because they're wild and free and you can't tame a bison.
Just like you, right?
Absolutely. I am sovereign and a free agent and no one's going to put me in a pen.
So
that's why I love bison, man.
Yeah.
They resist imprisonment and forced confinement.
Well, there you go. That's my husband.
Wild and free, man.
So, you know, if you're concerned about your health and you want to eat more meat, put more meats in your diet, then this is the type of meat that you should be eating. Now, when you're cooking bison, as with any sort of wild meat, it's lean. So you don't want to overcook it. This is the key. I mean, I've cooked wild meats. I cook it like a normal regular meat. I buy it at Cooper's or Safeway.
That's true. And the natives, the indigenous people, they would add fat to the meat. It's so lean. In fact, like with the caribou hunters up north, they stayed away from the super lean ones. They wanted a fattier type of animal because the fat in the animal is life-sustaining.
Yes, exactly.
You know, we've developed this hatred or fear of fat. In actuality, it's the opposite in nature.
Isn't that amazing?
You go for the fat. You want the fat from the animal, but it's clean and whole. And we should never be afraid of saturated fat or cholesterol anyway. That's all a bunch of crap.
Mm-hmm. So what happens is, like, if you're using a regular ground beef, then what people do is they add the rolled oats or breadcrumbs, right, to maybe absorb the fat and to also stretch their dollar. However, what I like to use is mashed cooked yams.
Oh, yeah, that's much cleaner.
Well, yeah, we like that, and it softens the meat up and it doesn't make it dry. Or you can use squash, like an acorn squash or butternut squash, and mash it up. And that's kind of a nice alternative to the bread or the oats. So I think that you should try that out. I like to use green onions sometimes instead of yellow or white onions. It's just a little different flavor. So it's the same idea, so you're just using different fillers, that's all. So what I do for this bison loaf is I use like one cup of chopped green onions, a couple of whole eggs, a cup of mashed yams, maybe a quarter cup of balsamic vinegar. I use a tablespoon of Dijon mustard. I use maybe 2 teaspoons of garlic powder or crushed garlic, lots of crushed garlic, some red chilies. Now, this is optional if you want the red chilies in there. And then I mix that all together with the ground bison, mix it all up nice. Then I put it in a loaf pan, and then I mold the loaf out. And then you can crumble with goat feta cheese if you like. Or you can add the goat feta cheese into the mixture. That's kind of nice as well. So there's a multitude of things that you can do there. I leave it in at 350 for about 40 minutes. You want to test for doneness because you don't want to overcook it. So what I suggest is you take it out a little bit early, let it sit, and it will continue to cook if you leave it out, but don't cut it. If you cut it, it will stop cooking. So that's kind of a little tip there. That's kind of an interesting tip, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. And getting back to the creatine,
okay, let's get back to that.
Well, the reason that it's so much higher is because simply the physical activity. You know, domesticated cattle are confined. They can't move, and they're forced to eat, and they eat garbage and soy and corn and, you know, who knows what else they're eating. But physically active animals, like even a moose, would have a lot more creatine. And, of course, a lot of the other nutrients, because they're made out of what they consume, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. So this is kind of a storybook lesson that a lot of people don't get because we weren't told the truth about nutrition in school.
Yes.
Wild animals are far more nutritious. And I'm just rereading Weston Price's great book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And it's just absolutely clear when you read that beautiful presentation how dental caries and structures in the jaw come as a result, and degeneration in the body is directly related to the food that people eat. It's just completely obvious.
Oh, yeah. And even you take a look at some kids that drink these apple juices and straight juices, like from the box and the can, their teeth are rotted. You think you're doing your kid a favor, but unfortunately, it's kind of just giving them.
Well, environment plays a role, but, you know, the North Switzerland, where he starts off in his first couple of chapters in the Loenzo Valley, I guess the northern Swiss is more granite and the southern parts is limestone, and then these people live in the valleys and it's very fertile. But as soon as the refined food starts coming in, the kids, which they measured in detail, because he was a dentist, right? He knew his stuff and he had a chemistry background. He knew what he was doing. He actually measured the caries and took measurements and photographs, and he proved that as the refined food came in, these kids developed dental caries, like massive amounts of it, whereas the former people or the people that were not on the refined food, the kids' teeth was beautiful.
Mm.
You know, and as the teeth go, so go the bones, right?
So they say.
Yeah.
Okay, another idea that you can do with bison or ground turkey is what I would do is I would put it in a bowl and add the onion to it. Then what I would do is get a piece of parchment paper, and I would spread the bison or the turkey and make it flat, maybe roll and pin it out. And then I would add some spices. You can add maybe some spinach, some cooked spinach on top of it, some feta cheese, olives, whatever, nutmeg, whatever you want, you can add in on top of it. Then you roll it up, and then you put it in a pan. And that's just another way to make a simple meatloaf, or out of chicken, or turkey, or bison. Even a regular ground beef, if it's a good quality, like you can get the butcher to grind it for you. So there's a lot of things that you can do on a shoestring, right?
And another feature of spoilage is exposing ground flesh to light.
Yes.
And when you thaw something out that's frozen, do not put it in the light. Keep it in the dark.
Yes.
And try and avoid even thawing it out. Like the other day, I was taking some freshwater prawns, and you can take them right out of the freezer, frozen, throw them right into the skillet with the garlic and the coconut oil and the butter, and cook them up, and before you know it, they're done. So a lot of what we have done no longer needs to be done, but these are habits we develop without question, and we just repeat them.
Well, unless you thaw it and it's in a brown paper. But usually the store-bought has got that cellophane over top of it, so.
Yes, and there are components in the plastic petroleum metabolites that actually amplify, and that's where those estrogen components go into the meat, because ground meat, surface area-wise, has much more fat than, say, a chunk of meat or a steak.
Yes.
So it's more prone, like hamburger will spoil much more, much sooner than, say, a chunk of meat. Because it's ground up, and like flour itself.
Yes.
So stay away from flour. Stay away from ground anything if you can. And if it is ground, make sure that it's frozen right away. And
Or freshly ground.
That's the best way, the old style. But who has a meat grinder in their kitchen nowadays?
You know what? When my mother, my sister and I, when my mom passed away, my sister got her meat grinder that used to hook on to the kitchen table. We fought over that, I'll tell you.
Really, huh?
Yeah, my mom used to grind it, you know, grind her ground beef from a big chunk of meat. It was really cool. In those days, I thought, you didn't think anything of it. But today, I would have loved to have one of those. I'm sure they still sell them. But nonetheless, that's my what's cooking.
Awesome. Well, get your bison on.
I certainly will.
Yeah, right on. Okay, moving on. Who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Mr. Matthew Park. Now, Matthew is the president of the INBF, which is the International Natural Bodybuilding Federation, and he specializes in motivating, educating, and inspiring others to be the best that they can be. And, you know, he sounds like a really nice guy. He really does. Now, he's a farm boy who started bodybuilding at the age of 12, and who does that sound like, Corey?
Sounds like yours truly to me.
I know. They made their own equipment. He did the training, like pull a tire and try to push tractors, all that stuff that they're doing today in, like, fitness that is really hip today. That's the stuff he used to do because that's all he had to work with.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. So he knows that bodybuilding, if done correctly, is sustainable for life. However, which we love that, right? If it's done correctly.
Yes.
And without drugs and you're eating right and you're doing it the right way, then this is something that is sustainable. And that's what we talk about now. It's all about whatever you're doing right now in your life, is it sustainable? Can you do this for the rest of your life? Right?
Well, that's something you got to take a step back and examine. Any sport, that came up in a conversation recently with a CSNA student about CrossFit. Is CrossFit sustainable the way that it's practiced, the way that it's advocated? Can you keep doing it? And the key is, regarding sustainability, the effects on health and injury. Is there a lot of injury in the sport? Like, for example, could you be a boxer for the rest of your life? Every day of your life, could you box? No, it'll punch your brains in. It could ruin your body and your health. So if you take a step back, you wouldn't advocate or support a sport like that for children or people because it has no life in it, and it causes damage and injury. So then you'd cross that one off on the list.
So it's short term. But anyway, there are many, many natural bodybuilding competitions happening in the world today. It is quite the phenomenon, and it also, they have a lot of categories for masters. Now, I'm not sure, some are different in the age category. Is it 40 and over is masters now?
Yes, there's the masters, then the grandmasters, the ultramasters.
Yes, so it's getting quite popular for that now, which is fantastic, because it used to be a young people's event, right? 17 to like 30 years old was old back in the old day, right? So now it's fantastic, and they've opened up a lot of different categories for women. So you don't have to be a hardcore bodybuilder to enter one of these competitions. They do have the bodybuilding, but they've got a misfit body, which is a softer look. They've got the figure, which is even softer than the misfit. Then they've got the bikini or the fitness model, which he says is likely, probably, if you want to enter a competition and you're not really buff, you want to see what it's all about, this is probably the best idea to commence with, because it works on, you know, your walk, your balance, it's about your hair and your nails and your beauty. And you have to have a nice toned buff body. There's no doubt about that. It's not about muscularity or conditioning.
Not to the same degree.
Not to that degree, but you want to look good. So I think that if you are ever considering going into a competition, then, you know, try a bikini or a fitness model, even a figure. Now, fitness is a totally different, not fitness model, but fitness is a total different ballgame. That you need to, in this day and age, you need to be a gymnast to do that. So kind of takes you out of the market a little bit, right?
Yeah, one thing I like about it is that the demand for fitness in terms of skill.
Yeah.
You know, gymnasts are highly skilled athletes. You start flipping around. Now, there's another sport that may not be sustainable for life. Can you be a gymnast and practice gymnastics from cradle to grave? Do you see any 75-year-old gymnasts doing cartwheels or some of the movements that are advocated in the sport itself?
Well, very few.
Very
few. A couple posted on Facebook.
Because you can't really do it. I mean,
yeah.
It's so demanding, and the training that goes into it is so arduous that, so there's something cool about bodybuilding. Like, we watched that video yesterday with that guy featuring that black dude down in Georgia. He's 70 years old. He looks phenomenal.
Yeah, nice skin, nice.
Oh, man.
Really, really good.
Some of those blacks have such beautiful skin and bodies, and when they bodybuild, they just look spectacular. spectacular. This guy is like from another planet, though. He's really setting a fantastic standard.
Right.
See, he is going to be training till the day he dies.
Right. And I mean, what does 70 look like? To us, 70 is old, but it's not.
70 is the new 50 when you're
exactly.
in shape.
Even the new 40. Anyway, Matt is a lifetime drug-free athlete. He lives the life. He takes his, he's into supplementation. He's into healthy food.
He's a great leader. That's what I like.
Yeah.
Leadership that sets the pace.
He's got a great attitude. He really does. And he really loves what he does. And he sounds, like I said, like a really nice guy. And I think between the three of us, we have a lot in common.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he dreamed about creating a federation, then he went and did it. And it shows you what you can do. Like, if you want to open a school or academy or an institute, the other day I was chatting with one of our students about that, and I said, well, the key factor in creating a school is your desire to do it.
Yes.
We live in our part of the world, it's not communist, it's not North Korea. You can actually open up a business here as an entrepreneur. We have that freedom, right?
Yes.
So a lot of people think, well, they don't really understand what it takes to create an academy or school. Like, I sort of used Aristotle and Plato as a standard. They opened up their own schools. They had a teaching concept, principles that were different than the status quo, than the other Athenians, right? And usually, like Paul Check or Poliquin or myself or Colgan, we have something unique or something special, something that people like. And so you create a school, and then you create courses, and you can have a lot of fun, but you can also design a school according to your own standards or philosophy, and then people like it and take it, and then they spread the word.
Well, it's good to take lots of different courses. Like, I didn't have just one dance teacher throughout my whole career. I've had maybe 40
yeah.
dance teachers throughout my career. There have been some that have really, I admire and really helped me along the way, really, really helped me along the way. And others that were okay, and I surpassed them. But you want to be eclectic when you're learning. And then what you do is you mold yourself with a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you take a little bit, then you have your own ideas, right?
Well, yes. I mean, that's sports nutrition is our forte, and then personal trainers, they study the mechanics, biomechanics, physiology, movement, all that, but they may not be getting a lot of sports nutrition insight, especially holistic and alternative medicine-based. So, you know, you study through another school like ours, and then maybe you become aware of other aspects of your profession or trade, and then you want to specialize in that. You know, maybe rehab, and then some guy specializes in that, or the Poliquin method of coaching, whatever it might be, right? Then you pursue that, you get that insight, that knowledge, and then you continuously add to who and what you are so that you become a truly fantastic teacher and coach.
Exactly. So I just want to say thank you to Matt. Appreciate your SNU interview.
Right on. So what is our hot topic?
Well, the hot topic today is the Winter Olympics 2014 in Sochi.
Yeah, I've been watching that, and I always enjoy watching the Olympics. I love watching the athletes in motion, in action, and competing.
Yes, I mean, I just can't believe what they're doing. I just can't believe what they do and not kill themselves. It's just amazing. They go beyond the call of duty. They really, I mean, what they're doing, like in the skiing and in the snowboarding and the flipping, it's just, you got to be out of your mind to do that. But
well, some of the sports I'm not interested in, and I think that's true for everybody. There's certain ones that you're attracted to, and there's reasons why, and so I'm convinced once again that life is a sport, and when you watch sport, you're attracted to it for whatever reason or not, and then if you evaluate that, you can come up with some interesting character elements of yourself.
Well, they always want to go bigger and better and more flips. Even the ice skating, they're doing some really amazing things, flipping her around in the air. She's up high. I'm on ice with blades. I don't know if I'd be doing that, but I really admire their dedication. They're phenomenal athletes. But I do have a little problem with the actual Olympics, which is a nonprofit organization, by the way.
Yeah, the IOC, as it's called, as an acronym, is a Swiss nonprofit, non-governmental organization. It's a privately managed institution based in Lausanne, Switzerland, and it was created in 1894. More recently, you know, there's the original Olympic we know about with the Greeks. Apparently that started in 76 BC and then came to an end when the Romans took over the Greek Empire around, I think, 400 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And the Olympics were originally fundamentally religious. It was a religious dedication to Zeus.
Right.
Which is why it was destroyed by Roman kings and leaders and Caesars, because they didn't accept their religion. And that was being promoted as a means. And so what happens in history is that sometimes the invading countries destroy everything to do with their culture and religion.
That's a little interesting piece of trivia. Now, Sochi, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is the highest budget in history of any Olympics.
Yeah, what did you say it was?
Over $50 billion.
Yeah, you know, that's
phenomenal. U.S. dollars, okay? We're talking about, we're not talking about any other kind of currency. We're talking about U.S. dollars. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it's rupees in Russia. They have different currencies. But, yeah, I know. It's incredibly cost-ineffective, I think. I've got my own concepts about how the Olympics should be managed and run. And, of course, I'm sure everyone out there does. I'd like to see an island, like one of the islands of Hawaii, for example.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't have to be that. Could be any island dedicated on a global level to an Olympic village, an Olympic environment, and held there every single year. Because I don't really give a shit where it's held. For me personally, I don't
care. It's got to have snow, winter, and it's got to have summer.
Yeah, you've got the mountains in the Big Island, for example, in Hawaii. It could be anywhere. I'm just using that as an example. But instead of wasting bazillions of dollars and recreating it, and then often what happens is that governments go into hock, taxpayers have to pay out, they lose money on it. Everyone loses except the privately run business of the IOC people in Switzerland. They always gain. They never lose, and everyone else is dedicating themselves and volunteering and putting their time and energy without knowing how much money these guys are making off the athletes.
It's all about the athletes. And one of the things that we were talking about this morning is the Olympic Committee does not advocate supplementation whatsoever. They are totally against it. However, what about McDonald's and Coca-Cola? There's got to be some pharmaceutical interest in this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, all of the medical persuasion and pharmaceutical interaction, it's all behind the scenes. This is the thing with not-for-profit organizations. Don't kid yourself. The people at the top are being paid millions and millions of dollars. It's privately owned, so no one really knows how much they're getting. But not-for-profit doesn't mean that everyone involved isn't getting paid. That's what people think.
That's a misconception.
Total. It means that they're able to offset taxes and defer them. But meanwhile, the people at the top that run it, the executive people, can be paid any amount of money. Like, there's no limit to it. And what they do, they use the not-for-profit concept as a way to mislead people into thinking that this is some kind of wonderful...
Do-gooder.
Yes. And so you can do all the work, all the volunteer. They get thousands and thousands of volunteers that do it for nothing.
Yes.
None of them are being paid. So you attract the athletes. A lot of them are starving and have a very difficult time managing themselves because they have to work 6 or 8 hours a day to do their thing, and they're representing their country. Meanwhile, a lot of the countries don't really support them financially. Or they do, but just barely.
Yes, I know.
So they have to get sponsorship, and they go around knocking on doors.
Yeah. It's just really sad, I think.
There's a dark side to it.
No,
it's not all what it pretends to be.
The athletes do it because they love what they're doing. They are like horses with blinders on. They love what they're doing. They would die just to get a gold medal. You know, they just love what they're doing.
Well, they associate the gold medal with recognition and money and job security and opportunities, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's what it's become.
It may and may not happen. It probably will happen. They'll get endorsements. But for how long? And their bodies will give out. It's short term. They can't do that forever. But I don't think they really care at this point in time. You know?
We watched that promotion of Nancy Green. So she won her Olympics, became popular through the Olympics, the achievement. And then she went on to become quite successful in the ski industry. They used her name. They used her success to promote the event and skiing and selling ski equipment. And that's what it's all about. It's about corporations and businesses that make money off the athletes.
Yes, exactly.
And the athletes will just, you know, line up for that opportunity because they're basically set for life themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But
top ones are. The top three are.
Yeah, and then everyone else is kind of forgotten. And then, of course, who knows who won such and such sport 20 years ago. self-forgotten.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a little club. And I've talked to a lot of Olympic athletes, and they don't even see the Olympics as the thing that it's supposed to be. There are other games, other world championships, the Pan American Games, to them that are more important, actually,
yes,
than the Olympics. But that's the one that is publicized.
And the money. The money, money, money,
big, money. Big, big money. Yeah, so the double standard is that they don't promote dietary supplements. They actually state, and I'll quote this, the CCES, which is the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport, which is where the samples of urine are tested. There's an accredited center, a drug testing center in Montreal on behalf of the IOC. It says that the CCES does not support the use of supplements, but recognizes that athletes often use them. The CCES believes the use of most supplements poses an unacceptable risk for athletes and their athletic career. So they're actually, now this is tied in with all of the coaches of all of the sports worldwide. They're telling these coaches that dietary supplements are contaminated, that they're not produced with proper government regulation, which is totally false, and that there's actual injury that could be done to the athletes taking the supplements. That not only are they useless, but they could be damaging to take, like taking whey protein or creatine could be damaging.
Yeah.
And the IOC tried to ban creatine about a decade ago, but they completely failed because the evidence was against that opposition position. In other words, they couldn't prove that creatine was harmful, so they had to let the athletes keep taking it.
I just think it's ridiculous because it's not a drug. Why can't the athletes stand up and say, listen, without us athletes, you don't have anything? Right?
Well, the athletes are like soldiers, and they don't have much say when it comes to standing up against the military business.
Yes.
It's a huge enterprise. It's political. It involves government. It may or may not depend on that for resources. But a lot of people don't know that the Olympics is a privately run business. Its purpose, hiding behind peace and unity, is to make money. That's the nature of all business.
Now, what was that we were talking about this morning about 10%, like of 50?
Yeah, on a website, if you go to IOC.org, you will find out that they themselves tell you that 90% of their revenue generated goes to the planet and supporting coaching and organizations and anti-drug this and that, but 10% of it's retained and distributed amongst themselves. So what did you say that the Sochi Olympics?
Over does? 50 billion.
Okay, so let's say 5 billion of that goes into the pockets of IOC. Now, what I've never liked.
Hello?
You go to the Olympic Village, you're going to see these barracks. It's like what you find in a military barracks. Very plain and basic, right? This is where the athletes camp out. So they're given this barrack-like environment to stay in. And meanwhile, all the executives are staying in five-star hotels, wining and dining, spending huge amounts of money on bizarre wining, dining, champagne,
yeah,
turkey dinners, pheasants.
Yes, I know.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Hotel expenses that are through the roof. Meanwhile, the Olympics that are the stars that make it, that they couldn't have without,
yeah,
are treated almost like semi-slaves.
I know. That's the part I...
And then all the politics involved with getting onto the team in the different countries,
yes,
is in itself sinister in many cases.
Yeah.
Absolutely sinister. And then, of course, there's the athletes that take the drugs that don't get caught, and we're supposed to believe that they're testing all the athletes and that hardly any of them use the drugs. And then it's such an embarrassment when, you know, Marion Jones is discovered to use growth hormone and she's this great Olympic star the Americans worship, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with Ben Johnson, who kind of started the whole bandwagon of testing for drugs back in, I think it was 1988 in Seoul, that he won the 100 meters but got caught on the finazenol using,
yes,
the drugs.
Yes.
And then through the proceedings in court, they found out that he had been using it for many years and had won competitions previous to that and had never tested positive. So he was masking the drugs because these guys are all ahead of the testing procedure, which tend to be not up to speed because they always talk about the costs, and yet they themselves don't want to spend the money on testing to the degree that could be done because they would lose a lot of their profit.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we can go on and on and on about this, but I think our time is up for our hot topic, and it is such a hot topic.
No
and we
kidding.
Can go on and on and on about other things about the Olympics and what's going on over there. with different communities and things like that, but we're not going to talk about this on this episode.
Yeah, so once again, we love Olympic sport. We love the athletes. We love the competition. We love the training. We love the dedication, but we've got to be aware that nothing is what it seems in this life on this planet. And when anyone
people
comes
are making
across,
a lot of money off those athletes.
Absolutely.
Off of their desire and initiative and their passion. People are making money off of that. You know what I mean? The corporations are making money from them. But you know what? What are you going to do? Right? It's their life.
As long as you've got Coca-Cola and McDonald's as the major sponsors for the Olympic event, I'm always going to be against it and consider that to be the obvious red flag.
Yes.
They are condoning the use of garbage. And that is completely unacceptable, while they're also at the same time denying the value of supplements and have no position about whole food. Absolutely zero.
Twisted. The thing's twisted. I mean, if you have any education in the world of nutrition and fitness and health and sports nutrition, you're going to see that it is a little twisted.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's our story.
Absolutely. Very good, dear. So what is your final word?
My final word is from thegymlifestyle.com. Some people want it to happen. Some wish it would happen. Others make it happen.